Independent.
In depth.
Inside EWN.
On 702. Live.
Streaming.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Welcome back. This is Inside EWN. Thank you so much to Mwenge Zikoko for the news. And he'll be back, of course, giving us more news updates at 9. But it's time now for our roundtable discussion. And we've been together actually since 7. So if you just joined, you are in time for the roundtable discussion. But next time, next week, please join from 7 o'clock, because that's when Inside EWN starts. In the first hour, we give you an update and we take a look back at the news week that was, and we also try throw forward to the news week to come so that you know what to look forward to in the coming week. And then in the second hour of the show, we take time to delve deeper into a subject matter of our choice, and of your choice really, because it's all dependent on what's catching or what's caught your attention. And today's roundtable is so important, but it's also very close to my heart, maybe because I have children around me. And it's really inspired by what's been happening in the Joshlyn Smith missing child case, I should say. I mean, the series and sequence of events here has been really shocking for me. There have been twists and turns the entire week, actually the entire month, since this child went missing. And I don't think anything could have prepared you and I for what we saw this week. Her mother in the dock among the accused. So, if you've been living under a rock, a six-year-old girl, her name, Joshlyn Smith, went missing last month. And the entire community in the Western Cape and Saldanha Bay has been searching and looking for her. She went missing while she was in the care of her mother's boyfriend. And police then launched that search. And that community has really done really exceptionally well. They've done a sterling job at coming together to look for this child. And they've put in resources and they've gone really to the ends to try find this child. And I think that's why I'm saying nothing could have prepared us for what we saw this week. Because her mother too, we kept on hearing how distraught she is, how she is desperate to get the child back, as you would imagine from any mother. And then this week, Joshlyn's mother, the six-year-old's mother, Kelly Smith, was charged together with her boyfriend with human trafficking and kidnapping, and they appeared in the Frederiksberg Magistrates Court on Thursday. Police believe, and they have evidence that, or they say they have evidence, I should say, that points to their involvement in the disappearance of their own child, of at least Kelly's child. And I mean, it's just been heartbreaking to see what's been going on here. At first, I was really surprised to think and to hear that Joshlyn's mother, Kelly Smith, was certain that her boyfriend wasn't involved, because you would imagine that the person who was, taking care of the child would be the first port of call, and you'd expect that he knows something. And he, as far as I understand from what I've been following in the story, was insisting that the child just disappeared. It really surprised me that Kelly Smith was, standing by her boyfriend. And I thought, this is really shocking. If it was me, and I don't want to say because it's not me, but I would be wondering, I would really be pushing in terms of the boyfriend to find out what happened to the child. And then this week when this happened, I think a number of the people that have been commenting in the comments that I've seen were saying this explains a lot because of Kelly Smith's posture. Now, it's important for us to say that she is innocent until proven guilty, and her boyfriend is innocent until proven guilty. They've been charged, but the state still needs to prove their case here. But I do think that there is grounds here for a conversation to be had around the safety of our children. Because I'm sitting here thinking, what is wrong with our society when a mother is being charged with the human trafficking and kidnapping of their child? And God forbid, they haven't been charged with murder yet, but we know that the child's bloody clothes were discovered last week, and I believe that police were still running tests, but they believe that the clothes belonged to Jocelyn. I mean, what type of a society do we live in that can have such a case being heard in the courts? And are we as a society failing our children? Are we not doing enough for our kids? I mean, how can communities better show up for the most vulnerable among us? I mean, children and women are the most vulnerable among us. And what's happening in this community in Middelbos must be really, really shocking for the people of that area. I can't imagine how they are processing this, as they've been helping and they've been really pushing to try find this child. And I believe that the search continues for Jocelyn, because nothing's been found yet outside of her clothes. But I'm inviting you to this conversation because I want you and I to share our experiences here. Are we failing our children? Can we do more? What could possibly be a reason behind this? I know that there are suggestions of this being a ritual killing of some sort, or muti, the child having been murdered for muti. Now, it's important to say we have no reason to believe at this stage that Jocelyn was murdered. But there are conversations about how police believe that they may have sold her for muti purposes, or traditional, well, I should say muti, because that's the term. But I've got people that are far more knowledgeable in this space who are joining us for our roundtable discussion to help us make sense of this, because they work with children every day and they know what the numbers, they know what the stats look like, but also they know how communities can show up for their children. But you, our listeners, form part of communities. And so I really want to hear from you about what could possibly be fueling such a thing. What could possibly be the reason behind such a thing? And what do you make of the developments? I'm certainly, I believe, not the only one that's just incredibly shocked by this. This is Inside EWN. My name is Khomotso Modise, and I'm your host this evening. Let's start with Carlo Peterson, who is the EWN reporter who's been working on this story. Carlo, you've been following the story from day one. And am I correct to say nothing could have prepared us for this plot twist of seeing Jocelyn's own mother in the dock this week in the Frederiksberg Magistrates Court?
Good evening, Khomotso. Yes, indeed. The community there were quite stunned to see Jocelyn's mother, Kelly, in the dock. What we know is that Jocelyn has been missing for 20 days today. She went missing on the 19th of February, disappearing there from her family home in Middelbos. We visited that area at the beginning of the search for Jocelyn in the first week. and what we saw there was Middelbos is largely an informal settlement in Saldanha Bay. Her mother, Kelly, told police that Jocelyn had been left in the care of her boyfriend, Jacqueline Apollos. Mm. However, we have since seen both Smith and Apollos being implicated in Jocelyn's disappearance.
Yeah.
They both appeared, like you said, in court this week, being charged there with kidnapping and human trafficking, along with two other suspects. Those four suspects are back in court, due back in court this week. Mm. We've been told they will make a bail application. The state has indicated that they will, of course, oppose that bail application. Khomotso, in the first week of Jocelyn's disappearance, like I said, we visited Middelbos, and what we found is a very impoverished area. The Smith family had been living in a small shack with no running water, no toilets. At that stage, Jocelyn had been missing for 3 days, and the search party looking for her were already frustrated. The previous night, what we heard was that they had been on a rampage in the community, ransacking some of the homes of people they believed were suspects in Jocelyn's disappearance. Mm. Those suspects included Smith and Apollos, and they were also threatened by that angry mob. Police then intervened at that stage, and the couple were taken to a place of safety. What we then saw was the investigation intensifying. We saw resources being brought into Saldanha Bay from the city of Cape Town, a new investigating team brought in, and all of that has, of course, culminated in these arrests that we saw now last week. Those other two suspects named Stefano van Rijn and Pumza Sigaka. And police and the National Prosecuting Agency have indicated that as the case unfolds, more arrests and charges could soon follow.
Yeah.
We visited the area again last week and met up with a small group of residents who are continuing the search for Jocelyn. And what they shared with us is that they are disappointed in police for not following up on certain leads that were shared with investigators quite early on after Jocelyn disappeared. They also said, of course, keep searching for Jocelyn in that area until she's found.
Sure. So you're saying the community already was suspecting the couple?
Yes, this is what we heard, they obviously acted on information that they had gathered in that week, threatening the couple to take them to the police. And like I said now, they were also quite upset that when this information was taken to police quite earlier on, it wasn't followed up on. Police obviously have their own way of doing things and investigations take its own course. But I think the frustration from the community side comes from, maybe if they had acted sooner, we wouldn't be in the situation we find ourselves in today.
Talk to me about the suggestion that this may have been, Jocelyn may have been sold for her body parts for Mutsi. I mean, I've been seeing a lot of comments from people speaking about the impoverished state of her family. And I think it's important that we rephrase this question correctly, because in no way should this be seen as a reflection on people that are impoverished or are living in situations like that. Many of them love their children and would die for their children. But is there a suggestion that they may have sold her for this out of desperation?
Yes, so those reports are unconfirmed at this stage. We have heard, people saying that there was a case of them actually selling the child to a Sangoma for Muti. Mm. But like I say, police haven't officially come out with that yet.
Okay.
Speaking to the community there last week, that is what they are also going with, that this did indeed happen. But obviously we can't report on that because we need to get the official line from from police.
Sure. All right. I'm going to let you go. That is Carlo Peterson. He's the EWN reporter that's been following the story from the very beginning. And I think that thank you for painting that picture for us so that we can get a sense of what's been happening on the ground. That community really been acting and been working really hard to find this child. But I think there's a lot that's at play here. And I think the story is very, very layered. But let's speak to some of our panelists. Our panelists today include Candace van der Riera, from the Western Cape Missing Person Unit. And we have Dr. Joan van Niekerk, the author and child consultant. And we also have Luke Lambrecht from Women and Men Against Child Abuse. Luke, I'm going to start with you because you deal with these cases every day. I mean, how often do we see situations where children are missing and their parents become the first suspects, for either their disappearance or their murder?
Well, there's three levels I'd like to answer that on. The first is that we have a real issue around the abandonment of babies for death, where people don't even report on it. So, for example, in Johannesburg, we have about 20 babies a month that we are picking up dead in the streets going to the mortuary for autopsies that nobody even reports on. And that's what my master's research focuses on. So that's not even reported on because they're concealments of birth. Secondly, in every case, I've got one, in fact, on Tuesday, where I'm going to give evidence for the state where systematically over a period of weeks to months, a father, mother systematically murdered one child, tortured another one, and sexually abused another one. And that's in the family. And then the following month, April, I've got another case I'm giving evidence in, where we have a family who the Department of Social Development actually removed their child from them. So in other words, it was reported. The welfare placed the child back with the family, and the family killed the child. So we have so many layers where we have these problems where we have children whose births are not celebrated and their deaths aren't mourned. We have families who systematically, I mean, they literally torture these children to death. And then we have another level at which the state, which is supposed to be providing protective services, simply does not. And then my final comment is, in terms of the Muti side of things, it is definitely an issue. In three of the cases, so I gave evidence in two cases last year, both of them had a ritualistic element to them in terms of sacrificing their child or, you know, giving up for a sacrifice for finances, for example, in these very bizarre rituals where eventually the children died. And the other case where a tiny little boy of about three or four, I mean, I don't even want to traumatize your audience, but I mean, he had his genitals cut off for Muti, and the family knew the person who took them, and that boy survived. So we are brutalizing our children on a level that nobody comprehends at the moment.
And I don't want to suggest that they could possibly be a reason why people do this. I mean, it's horrible, it's inexcusable, it should never be entertained, nor should it be, you know, excused. But I'm really interested in when, because I do know you interact sometimes with victims, and I'd imagine you also interact sometimes with perpetrators.
Sure.
What's fueling this, Luke? I mean, this posture as society that we have, just being so horrible to our little ones, what's going on?
Well, I think the primary driver for me has been the fact that our family planning system has been a wholesale failure. So we have an enormous number of unwanted and unplanned children. And you can give, there is no worse kind of fate you can hand a child than to be both unplanned and unwanted. And as a result, that child is seen as an interruption. You have step-parents coming in, seeing them as competition to the to their partners. You have them, in the case of Muti, seen as assets to be traded. So you're not seen that little person entering the world as another being who needs to be nurtured and raised in the company of the illuminated witnesses of their childhood. You are seeing them as being treated with absolute disdain, to the point where they are punished for a life they haven't even lived.
And I mean, when you do speak to some of these perpetrators, is there a sense of justifying it? I know I dealt with you once, Luke, where there was a family, a Congolese brother and sister who were also who'd done something similar to that to was it a 3-year-old, I think?
Yep, and the ritualistic murder. I remember it well.
And I think the sense that I got there is that they didn't feel like they were doing anything wrong. I mean, when I was in court covering that story, Luke, it seemed as though they were very unbothered. They just wanted to get out of court. Is there a justification element where perpetrators justify this?
It's interesting. We have never, ever had the perpetrators coming out and saying, this is what we did, where we systematically inflicted the sadistic torture on these children that led to their death. They kind of say, we don't know what happened, you know, the child fell, or, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. So there's a whole lot of minimization of what they do. And there isn't, I've never seen in any of the cases any remorse. I mean, I think they regret being caught, but they're certainly not remorseful for what they have done. And I've also not seen an attempt at justification, but simply minimization and complete denial of their role in the death of this little person that they're supposed to be caring for.
This is Inside EWN. We are taking your calls on 011-883-0702 and 021-446-0567. We're also taking your WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702. I'd love to hear your contributions on this very topic. We're really speaking about children, I suppose, on the back of what happened with Jocelyn Smith, right? And that story really still making headlines. Her parents, or at least her mother and the boyfriend, being charged with her murder this week. And I'm asking the question about the role of communities in ensuring the safety of our children. How can communities better show up for the most vulnerable in, or the most vulnerable among them? And I mean, the story is just, it's just crazy. It's absolutely insane. And we've got a panel of experts today who are helping us make sense of the story. I want to go to Candace van der Riede. She is the Western Cape's missing person, or she's from the Western Cape Missing Person Unit. Thank you so much, Candace, for holding, and thank you for joining us this evening. I mean, this story, of course, happened in the Western Cape. What's been the sense that you're hearing on the ground? I mean, you work with the Missing Person Unit. Is this case any different from the cases that we've been seeing, at least in terms of child kidnapping and abduction in the area?
Good evening, Komoso. At first, what we've experienced in this case is it's not the same like others, because Jocelyn's case was extremely public. It was made public, and everybody was posting lives and posting on TikTok and posting all kinds of information and things like that. I have worked on 7 other high-profile cases where we had everything was planned from the word go. Jocelyn's case was not planned. I think there was actually a lack on the police's side, because when a child goes missing, the very hour that a child goes missing, that is a golden hour. That is the hour where you will be able to find out everything, try and gather information and things like that. That wasn't done, because there wasn't a specified time as far as the parents are concerned.
Candace,
it was never ever...
Sorry about that. I really want us to get the most out of what you're saying, because you're making really important points, but your sound is a little muffled. So I'm going to ask that you remove us from speaker if you are if we are on speaker. Otherwise, please just try speak into the phone.
Okay. I'm going to move.
Sure, let's try again. Okay. While Candace fixes her line, because we really want to hear what's happening there, let's take a listen to a voice note.
I just want to comment on this. I think in my own view, and in a view like of a lot of people, this is a very like scary thing, and very shocking thing to have people who disappear because of multi-purposes, right? But where are those sangomas that are sold, these bodies? Where are those sangomas that are sold, these body parts? Why are they not being arrested? Because I do see that people are being arrested, but I don't see headlines saying that the sangoma has been arrested for buying body parts. I think that's the problem. We need to find those sangomas and deal with them. Sure, this is Given from Tutuza.
Given, thank you so much for that. It's an important point that you make there. And I do know, I have seen cases before where the sangomas are arrested. I am hoping, and I believe that police are working on this. They are saying that there are going to be more arrests that are going to be made. So we're hoping that if it is a ritual killing, because we, and I shouldn't say killing, because at this stage, we don't know whether Jocelyn has been murdered. I hope that our panelists can just remind us, and maybe Candace will help us with this. At this stage, my understanding is that she's been, or they have been charged with kidnapping and not murder yet, because the child hasn't been found dead or alive. And so I think once that has been established, then we'll see more arrests, and the appropriate arrests will be made. I do see that we have some calls, but let's allow Candace to make her contribution and to finish off the point. Candace, you were making a point there, and while we're at it, just remind us, Jocelyn hasn't been found, right?
Jocelyn hasn't been found.
All right, that's
can
lovely.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you clearly. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Please continue with your point.
Okay, so the first hour when the child goes missing is the most important hour, because that will make sure that time is a very important factor, especially when a child goes missing. So the first hour is the very most important hour. Once that hour is complete, it won't even take you half an hour to get that child out of Saldanha or out of the entire area. So time is a very, very important factor. Mm. And in Jocelyn's case, nobody could give a specific time as to when she disappeared, because they only noticed way afterwards that she was gone.
Mm.
So when the police came, they did a small little search, and then they had to discontinue the search because it was load shedding. The place is dark. There's no electricity, which is also a problem.
Mm. Sure.
So now we have people making things public on TikTok, posting leads, giving this case all kinds of publicity. Everybody's saying, but the publicity is good. But sometimes publicity really hampers the case. In this case, there were people's shacks that was destroyed. There were people being attacked. People were fighting all because of all these lives and everything that was being posted. Chances are whoever might have Jocelyn was watching all this. And having all these problems in this case, it could have actually help the perpetrator or the suspect who might have taken her, could have helped this person get away with getting the child out of Saldanha.
Mm. I do want to bring Luke back into the conversation because he is going to be leaving us soon. As you give us your parting shot there, Luke, just remind us, in the cases that you've been working on, how often do we see the Sangomas actually in the dock among the accused?
Not one case I've seen so far. So in terms of and interestingly, if you look at the other cases I mentioned where these illegal terminations of pregnancy that are discarded, we don't see any of those so-called doctors in the dock either. So it's always one step removed, and we never see any of the Sangomas or the abortion practitioners in the dock ever. I haven't had one case where that has been, where they've been in the dock.
Mm. I'm going to allow you to just give us your parting shots here, because I do know, Luke, you do have to leave. The work that Women and Men Against Child Abuse is doing is absolutely amazing. And I'd imagine you are watching this Jocelyn Smith story very closely.
Very much so. And I think the reason that we want to watch these cases closely is when you have the opportunity to put a spotlight on an individual, I think it's incredibly important, because this child that we are talking about, Jocelyn, is one of 55,000 children a year that we are trying to manage. And if we can learn something from this, we can conscientize the public, we can get the public to step up and actually act as sort of concerned citizens and report things that they're worried about when children are not well, we can save more children, because otherwise we don't stand a chance.
Mm, thank you for that. That is Luke Lambrecht there from Women and Men Against Child Abuse, and they're doing really great work there. All right. We still have Dr. Joan van Niekerk, who is an author and child consultant. She's part of our conversation this evening, and we're going to be drawing you in, but we are going to go quickly to a spot. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Dr. Joan. She's done a lot of work on this, and she's even written books about the child safety, and I think that there's a lot really that we can learn from some of your findings. Mushere and Phil, I also see you. Please continue holding. We'll be taking your calls right after this.
Make sense of the week that was. Prepare for the week to come.
Inside EWN on 702.
Welcome back. This is Inside EWN, and my name is Komoto Omudise, a member of the EWN team, and I'm with you this evening as we really cover a really important story and a social ill, really, on the back of what's been happening in the Western Cape. Six-year-old Jocelyn Smith really missing now for it's been 20 days since she went missing. And today we're covering a really important topic. It's missing children in South Africa, the role of communities in ensuring the safety of our children. And on our panel this evening now, we have Candace Vanner Riera, who's from the Western Cape Missing Person Unit, and Dr. Joan Vaniekerk. Before I come to you, Mosheri, and Phil, Dr. Joan, I want to really bring you in here. You're an author and a child consultant. I think oftentimes, Doctor, the question is asked, how can communities do better in taking care and showing up for their children?
Yes, I've listened to this evening's conversation up until now with great interest and also great concern. One cannot even imagine the terror this child has gone through. That is if she is still alive. And I concur totally with my colleague, Luc Lomprecht, who talks about the trafficking in body parts and so on, which is been of great concern to me for several years. Even when I worked at Childline, we did research on this, and the results of that research were very concerning. There was a lot of anxiety amongst police because of their own belief systems in terms of investigating in these cases. And indeed, we never saw at Childline a single case going to court, as Luke has said. I do think communities have some responsibility. You know, when one looks at the images of where this family lived, the shack that they lived in, this is a child who should have been brought to the attention of the authorities a lot earlier. And yet we know it's very difficult for authorities to sometimes intervene in remote areas like this. And so what we really need is a sense of responsibility from all our citizens that our children belong to all of us. They're not just my children. They're not just your children. They're our children. And when we as communities develop this kind of mindset, then I think we have a lot more opportunities to make sure that children like Jocelyn do not go missing. I do believe that this child's plight in terms of, you know, family issues and family problems was possibly known to a number of people, and yet there is sometimes an anxiety to intervene. And when I worked for Childline, we used to ask people who were on radio programs such as this to please phone Childline if you have an issue with a child. You can report anonymously. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to give your address. You can say, I know about this child. I'm really concerned about this child. I believe this child is in some form of danger at the moment. And we'd like to see more communities taking this kind of responsibility. But I have enormous concerns about this child. If she is still alive, one wonders about her mental state, how very, very frightened she must be, and what will happen to her if she is found and returned to our communities, which, of course, we hope she will be found, and our biggest hope is that she will be found unharmed. But the likelihood of this as time goes on does become more and more remote. If she is returned, though, we do know that she will need a lot of assistance as a little girl who's experienced what I would call a really extreme trauma. I mean, there's no words to even describe how deeply traumatized this child must be. And she will need very special care. And even more than that, she will need to be placed in a family that is nurturing, kind, able to accept that she will certainly, you know, present with problems that will need special attention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about therapy helping children heal, and it does. But more important than therapy, or as important with therapy, perhaps I should say, is a caring, loving, secure family environment in which this child begins to feel safe again. Mm. That is the critical need that children who've gone through this experience have.
Sure. I want to take some calls there because, you know, you've said something about the involvement of authorities, especially in areas that are remote. Moshere, you want to speak about the community not allowing police to get involved. Thank you so much for your patience. Please go ahead.
Evening, and to your guest, the issue of child safety and also missing children is a difficult thing, and it's a community problem. And the difficult part is maybe to your panelists, how often is family members involved in this issue, where you find that the child disappears because the family member is involved? And if that is the case, because I heard one of your panelists talking about the issue of time, that is important that immediately the child is reported, then normally when it's a family member involved, of course, the community wouldn't be aware about it. And the family, if they are involved, they wouldn't report it. It will only be noticed by the community when they don't see the child as normally playing with their kids. That's when they will start reporting. And also, when is the community supposed to be involved? Because with the issue of Jocelyn, and it's not the only case, where you find that the community try to assist in searching, where the police saying that, no, you are interfering. What role should the community play? Of course, if that's where you have to phone, that one they can be done. But on the issue of search, where is the community supposed to involve? Because when they do that, the police are saying you are interfering. What is it that the community must do?
Joan, I wanna give you an opportunity to answer that because Moshera there poses a number of questions. Thank you so much for that.
Very important questions, Moshera. I think that one has to listen to the police. Sometimes you can be very well intentioned and you can interfere with the police investigation quite unwittingly. But when you feel that something is happening that is not appropriate and it involves the police, you must then report to someone higher up, either the captain of the police station or the regional commander or inspector. And of course, we do have a reporting system when we do believe that police have acted in a manner that is not okay. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say that as soon as you notice, first of all, it's not enough to wait until a child has gone missing. Communities are the eyes of parents when parents either fail their children or are absent from the home for some reason. Mm. And there are times when parents are absent from the home, and sometimes it's due to no fault of their own, maybe an urgent medical appointment or something. So where you notice a child who is not being looked after, please report immediately. Don't wait for something to happen because that is too late. Mm. So that is what I do say to people. Don't wait. Rather report. And report anonymously if you are concerned. Yeah. Report anonymously if you think the police have not picked up the case and done anything. Mm. And you can report anonymously to Childline. The number there is 116. Sorry, I had to think about that.
So.
116. But please report and just speak to the counselor on duty and just say, this is what I'm concerned about. This is what I see happening. Mm. And I am concerned about this child's safety and well-being.
Yep. Phil, you want to speak about negligence. Someone here is not doing what they should be doing in taking care of their children. Good evening. Thank you so much for your patience.
No, good evening, and thank you very much for this opportunity. You know, there are multi-attributional factors why children miss. The dysfunctional families they are product of a fighting family. So they are individual. They are individual problems. And are into nyope. They are into what they go out of the family and whatever. National families, but at the gas then who are not looked.
Sure. Okay. Phil, your line is not great. I'm going to ask you to just move around a bit. Shame, because I know that you've been holding for very long to make your contribution. And Phil, okay. It seems Phil's line is not great. Phil, if you can hear me, I'm going to ask you to move around, please, because we really want to hear what you have to say. And I think the crux of his contribution is based on all the social ills that contribute to how we treat children. You've touched on drug abuse, but I'm really interested in your contribution. So I'm going to ask you to move around, please, and try find a spot where the line can be a little better. Let's take a voice note for now.
Good evening. This is Theo from Duduza. I wish the South African police could actually apply a different system when it's approaching the missing child's case. For instance, the parents' cell phones trackings, like Section 205 of Criminal Procedure, because this is where you pick up the trends. Forensic expert should be able to pick up certain things. For instance, picking up the filling station's cameras that are nearby. All that should be exhausted so that we're able to be sure that no, there's no trace of this child. But currently, I'm not satisfied that there's no trace of this child because not all means have been actually exhausted.
Candace, I think this is one for you because this is something that you keep an eye on closely. I mean, how developed are the police's systems? Because this is a really important point that's being made here. There should be systems of this nature to ensure that the children are found or a child is found as soon as possible. How developed are the police's investigations capacities, really, to find missing children in that first hour, as you say?
I just want to touch a bit on the first question. When it comes to we did 7 high profile cases, right? And in all of those 7 cases, it was somebody that the child knew that murdered that child.
Oh, this is
the first question. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all that's the 7 children was somebody that they knew that came to their houses. That were very the children were very familiar with. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Then, when it comes to the police, we do work very closely with the police, and our Cape Metro area is more established and more equipped to do cases like that of Jocelyn. That's why the first week when we went down to Saldanha, I requested that they put other detectives, get detectives from Cape Town to do the job, but I was told that there's no budget for it. Because I work on the ground every single day with our detectives and our FCS units. I know exactly who my good detectives are.
So no budget to look for the child. There's no budget for
that. That is what I was told.
For what? For more resources that are required for the search?
To get more experienced detectives on board.
Okay, sure. And the detectives that are currently in that unit? Because yes.
When we worked with the one detective, he told us that it was his only second missing child.
He said
it was only his second missing child. The first missing child was they found within the same hour or within the same day, not too far.
So what was he saying? I'm not experienced enough to deal with this.
Enough.
So
he was indirectly. So this is one of the reasons why I became very angry, and I emailed and I lodged complaints and things like that, because at the end of the day, this is a child's life that we are talking about, and every child to me is their lives are all equal to me, and they are all important. So when I did do the request for more experienced detectives, I was told that there was no budget. But then when the political parties ended the entire search and started stirring the pot, then resources were made available for the search for this child, which is very sad, because at the end of the day, we all want what's best for everyone's children. And I mean, like, our organization doesn't only do missing children. We do referrals to the Department of Social Development. And we have experienced cases where we find mothers in Cape Town Metro. Some of them are even prostituting their children as young as 10 years old for drugs.
Sure.
So the situation out there is very, very bad.
Sure, Candace. I mean, this is like, it's just, you know, so the problem is just layered, hey, and multifaceted. We have Phil back on the line, and he was in the middle of making a point. Phil, I want to give you the opportunity to make your point very briefly, please, sir.
No, good evening, and thanks. There are many reasons why children miss. It's for their own individual protection, running away from belligerent, cantankerous, and comedianly attitude of their caregivers. Caregivers takes different forms. It can be biological. It can be the various parents who, after divorce and not with children, choose their own safety. But now the second part of the why children miss is because they come from dysfunctional families where they end up being in drugs and whatever. They are no longer the original children that you give birth to.
Sure.
They are controlled by drugs and everything, and the new drug laws who become their role models, and their role models, and the people who wouldn't reach it, and they control them.
Sure.
But the conflicts also can contribute into children missing. The wars between communities and whatever can contribute in children. And how do we then come up with the type of an assessment or a mitigation? We need social development to establish a community-based, you know, response to children.
No, that's true, Phil. That's very true. It needs to be a joint effort. And I mean, you're right. We cannot divorce the social ills that communities are going through from what we're seeing. Dr. Joan and Candace, I want to give you an opportunity, a minute each, to give us your parting shots. And I want you, Dr. Joan, as you wrap up, just to speak to those social ills that these communities are going through that often contribute to how they treat little children.
Absolutely. I do believe that our problems with drugs, we have enormous problems with drug addiction in this country, not just in this province. The poverty, the extreme difficulties that parents face in feeding their children, all of these things are of great concern. If you have, then share with your neighbor. If you are able to, keep an eye on your neighbor's children. Make sure that children are cared for by entire communities. We've got to the point where we can no longer afford to say, my child is my responsibility, your child is your responsibility. It should be, my child is your child, and your child is my child.
Yep.
We share that responsibility.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joan. And Candace, thank you so much for joining us. Please just let us know where we can find you and where the communities can get in touch with you if they need any help. Candace?
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
I can hear you now. I'm just saying, please just give us the details where people can find you as the Western Cape Missing Person Unit as you give us your final contribution.
What I would like for everybody to hear is that it takes a village to raise a child. People, we cannot raise our children on our own. We have to look after one another's children. And when we reach that stage where we truly adopt that attitude of your child is my child, where our communities will be in a much better space,
yep.
Then also I would also like to suggest that people take photos of their headshots of their children, keep it on their phone, try and print it out, write their weight, height, eye color, hair color, everything on the back of the photo, keep it, paste it on the fridge. Also, do it, try and change the photo every 6 months.
All right.
When our children walk, when you walk, don't let your children walk alone, because you know what? I've been a community worker for more than 20 years, and I still see our mothers are walking way up ahead and our children are coming out at the back and they're busy on their phones. It's a second to take that child.
Yeah. Candice, thank you so much. That is Candice Van Herrera. I did want her to share some details with us, but if you search Western Cape Missing Person Unit, you can get in touch with them and you can give them any information. This does bring us to the end of Inside EWN for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Khomozo Modise. We will be keeping a close eye on that Jocelyn Smith case, and our prayers really do go out to her loved ones and all those in her community. For now, though, this does bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in and have a blessed Sunday.